Patrick McDonald here with Johnson Wagner coming from an undisclosed location. Wags, 4th of July weekend is on the precipice. I figure it's always a good time to kind of take a step back, look at the season as a whole. We'll get to the Travelers Championship here and what happened there at TPC River Highlands. And then we'll look at what has happened so far this season, what we think is going to happen the rest of the way, and then get to the John Deere Classic, which I know you found some success at in your playing days as well. But I want to know, you were out at Pinehurst last week. How did it end up for the kiddo?
Graham played great in the final round, shot 67 on number six, ended up moving from 29th to 15th in the third round. Really nice finish for him. Going to just climb up the North Carolina Junior Boys ranking. And now I'm down in South Carolina at Orangeburg, at Orangeburg Country Club, playing in the Carolinas Junior Boys. Big event in the Carolinas. 150 players cut to 60 in ties after 2 days. And winner of this event gets an exemption into the U.S. Junior, which he lost in the playoff for the final spot just a couple weeks ago. So he's got some extra motivation this week to go out and get a dub.
Yeah, absolutely. Seems like the game's in a good spot. Just gotta maybe get some breaks here or there, and he'll be there at the Junior, hopefully. Speaking of playoffs, Johnson, we had a great one Monday morning at TPC River Highlands. If I'm being honest, I was hoping for a bit more than just one hole from Victor Hovland and Scotty Scheffler. I had my coffee ready. I was getting ready to roll. And then, boom, you blank, and Victor Hovland is your Travelers Championship winner, his first win since the Valspar Championship last year. Wags, it's been a pretty up and down few years for Victor Hovland, but it seems like with his talent level, he's good for one win every single year, no matter his confidence level, no matter his form, no matter his swing, and he gets it done over the world number one on Monday.
Yeah, he played great. He drove the ball well. He did everything nicely. I was most impressed by his chipping. The up and down on 15 after watching Scotty Scheffler pitch it over the back of the green. Victor just knocked it up there to a tap in from the front of the green. But Patrick, for me with Victor Hovland, like, can he just be content with his golf game for a little bit and see how good he can get with what he has? I mean, we've seen him contend at major championships when back in 2023, when at the PGA Championship, it was on the 16th hole. He hit it in that fairway bunker playing with Brooks Koepka. And then the next year at the PGA Championship was playing with Bryson in that second to last group. Like, I want to see Victor Hovland take that step and go out and win a major, because we all know he's got that sort of upside. He just needs to get out of his own way, stop searching for stuff, and just be content for a little bit and just flush it like he does. I mean, the sound after the playoff from Scotty Scheffler was talking about how he played with him 1 year at Bay Hill, and after the round was like, geez, Victor, you just hit every shot right off the center of the face, like most impressive ball striking display Scotty Scheffler had seen. So why can't Victor just give himself a break and play with what he has?
I agree with you. And I will say, from the chipping and pitching perspective that you mentioned, maybe a positive from coming out of all these swing changes and rabbit holes and going through all the swing coaches, is there's been a bit more reliance on the short game. And this year in general, it's been pretty sharp, especially based on his historical levels. And you mentioned 15 too, just a great up and down there to make sure it gets on the right level, stops perfectly, tap in, stress-free birdie to apply some pressure on him. And I will say, for me, with Vic Wags, it all comes down to the driver. And if he drives the ball like he did this weekend, the rest of the season, the rest of his career, the rest of the game is still super elite, and the talent level is just super elite, where I think we can see that consistency from 2023 start to peak its head a little bit more.
I mean, the two driver swings off 18, both in regulation on Sunday night, tied for the lead. It's getting dark. That's an awkward tee shot, especially if you move it left to right, because there's that big tree down the left-hand side. Knowing how penalizing the right rough is, where Scotty hit it in regulation, he steps up there with the honor in the playoff and just sends it down the middle. I mean, it's a little bit of a drive out there from the driving range, maybe got a little bit tight in that 7-minute drive and just piped it. And to respond with the iron shot he did after Scotty stuffed it in there, I think it takes a lot of guts. And I mean, talk about chipping. The chip he hit on 16 in regulation, when he missed it a little bit long left into that rough, really touchy shot coming down the hill and just chips it to kick in again. I think that short game, you mentioned it, it's becoming a strength, and look out for Victor Hovland. Want to see some more consistency? Hey, he got in contention briefly at WM Phoenix Open, where he finished in the top 10 and then played really well in Canada just a couple weeks ago. So can we see Vic get back into becoming a top 10, top 15 machine? I hope so towards the end of this year and moving forward.
And you talk about guts. I do want to rewind a little bit and talk about regulation. And it was a very scratchy first 10 holes from him. Didn't look really all too comfortable out there. It seemed like him and Scotty were playing a game of hot potato almost with the lead. I think at one point there were five exchanges in a row of the lead, and Hovland looked more comfortable from 15 feet on the greens than inside 5 feet. But out of the restart, in particular, Wags, it just seemed like he found a new gear. And I think the PGA Tour does a social media thing where they do a walk with the winner afterwards, and he mentioned that he had a big plate of chicken parm during the break, and he just came out, he was burping in between holes, trying to keep it down, was like almost too full and a little sluggish. But his game out of that restart, I was really impressed with his mental fortitude, knowing that he could have booted away this tournament and came back playing those last few holes a couple under.
Yeah, I mean, the birdie on 14 right out of the gates after the restart, the chip on 15, the chip on 16, two quality shots on 17, which is a difficult hole. And I mean, hey, he hit a great shot into 18 in regulation. We saw that shot spin back for a number of players, a bit unfortunate, came back where it did, but he gave it a great run, almost won the thing in regulation. But man, how about Scottie Scheffler making that putt about 7 feet for par on 18 to force the playoff, giving it a fist pump. I was watching with my son Graham, and he was just like, man, I love when Scottie Scheffler shows emotion, because you don't get to see that out of him that often. And that was quite a moment. And I'm with you. I was hoping for about a four hole playoff on Monday.
I know we get Harris English and Kramer Hickok able to do it, but not Victor Hovland and Scottie Scheffler, unfortunately. We'll get into the world number one. Just to put a bow on Victor, eighth PGA Tour win. He's won every season as a full-time member outside of 2024. I think that speaks a lot to his talent level, of course, and up to number 20 in the FedEx Cup on the inside track for the Tour Championship, which he has qualified for every season as a full-time member as well. Let's talk about the world number one, Johnson. Had that lead out of the restart, didn't go his way, hit some loose shots, I thought, when you think about the wedge shot into 14, and just seemed like he put a lot of unnecessary stress on his shoulders late, and even that 8-foot par putt on the 72nd hole that came from a 27-foot birdie putt that he blew by well past, but another chance to pick up the second win of the season and another chance that passes him by.
I mean, last year, Patrick, he was just putting fields away, winning by wide margins. The year before was the year of nice comebacks. I remember at the Olympics, at the Players' Championship, he was coming from 5-6 shots behind. And then last year, running away with tournaments by extremely wide margins. He had a chance to do that on Sunday. And I mean, the birdie on 13 was great, but then the shot into 14 coming off the restart was a little bit lackluster, spinning off the front of the green, had to make a good putt. And then 15, I mean, I know he's surprised. First of all, the tee ball on 15 would have gone in the water had they not had so much rain. But then to chip it over the back of a green and leave yourself one of the most brutal up and downs on that golf course, yes, he got it up and down, but then had a great chance on 17. And he had every opportunity in those last 6-8 holes to put the tournament away, and he just kept Victor and, for that matter, Colin Morikawa, who had already posted at 20, he kept them alive, and that is continuing to be the trend. I mean, at the U.S. Open, he had every opportunity to put pressure on Wyndham Clark and just couldn't do it from the first hole on when he hit it over the back of one. Like, these are mistakes we're seeing out of Scottie Scheffler. Now, granted, I'm saying this because the guy's had now 4 second place finishes. He never finishes outside the top 25, barely outside the top 10. So he's clearly still the best player in the world. But the guy that we saw a year ago being able to just slam the door shut on fields, he is not doing that so far this year, with the exception of the Amex, where he looked like the Scotty of last year.
Tell me if you think this is fair. Coming out of the restart, to me, it seemed like every mistake he made was a bit too aggressive. When you think about the chip on 15 as well, the putt on 17 was too much speed, and then the putt on 18 where he left himself 8 feet, again, too much speed. To me, it almost seems like a guy who really wants to win and is almost trying to push it. And the Scottie Scheffler of these last 2 years, that hasn't been his MO. That hasn't been his DNA. It's been almost death by a million cuts, center of the green, playing conservative, pouncing when he absolutely has to. But it seems like almost these close calls are, do you think they're starting to get to him a little bit?
I think so. I think he's pressing. I mean, you can see it in his post-round sound as well. Very short, very kind of snippy for Scotty. Did you say the putt in regulation on 18? Because the putt in the playoff on 18, I know he had to make it.
Yeah, and the playoff.
He had the same. It was on the similar line to his putt. He ran 7 feet by the day before, the night before. Like, you don't have to hit that putt with that kind of speed. And, I mean, he hit it on a good line. He said he hit it the way he wanted to, just gave it a little extra speed to make sure it held its line. But he hit it way too hard. And yeah, I think that's a great take. The fact that he's had so many close calls, he wants to get over the line. Now it's going to become questions going into the Open Championship and the Scottish Open. Like, can Scotty Scheffler win anymore? And he's going to have to deal with media asking him what's going on. Obviously, you and I know the answer is yes, but there's a lot of media out there, especially at those big events, that are going to ask stupid questions. And Scotty has shown to have very little patience for stupid questions, but those questions are going to be coming. You wait for that press conference.
Gosh, the Scottish journalists are going to have a field day with that Tuesday morning press conference. It's going to be unbelievable. And remember, it was at the Open last year, Johnson, that his reply to some question about, like, why does he do it went viral, and some people took it out of context. And so it's always a crapshoot over there. Let's get into a couple other guys there at the Travelers Championship. We'll touch on Scotty as one of these bigger storylines in 2026. But Colin Morikawa, you mentioned the final round, 61. He had chances to take it even deeper, I thought, as well. But it seemed like from afar, Johnson, it looked like this guy finally was healthy and walking normal again. And before that injury at the Players' Championship, I think a lot of people forget he was arguably the most confident player in the world, and he's starting to look a lot more like that.
Yeah, obviously the win at Pebble, had a nice finish at Genesis and Bay Hill. You were thinking, I mean, I picked him to win the Players' Championship. I wish he had played more than one hole. But Colin Morikawa, I think, was ready to get back in the majors winner circle. And when I look forward to Royal Birkdale, if he is, in fact, healthy, near 100%, Birkdale's that kind of golf course that's more point A to point B of a Lynx golf course. I think his game sets up perfectly for Birkdale, especially the way he's driving it. And how about just a wonderful shout out to the Travelers Championship, with the fact that when he hit that shot into 18 in the rain, it was a massive crowd, massive roar. Mm-hmm. And then for him to make that putt on top of it, it was one of the loudest roars I've heard in a signature event, regular PGA Tour event all year long. Shame that rain delay came, because it would have been fun to see Victor and Scotty walk up with the massive amounts of people there.
A great pop too, right when that one hit the bottom of the cup, right? The crowd pop, you get it from the NBA Finals and the World Cup when they score a goal. Rarely do you get it for a made putt on the PGA Tour, but I think it was a great one, like you mentioned. And then we got to give some props to the U.S. Open champion, Johnson. Wyndham Clark, once again, just got up and down from just about everywhere around TPC River Highlands. I think on Sunday, he only had 21 putts on his round, which has to be close to a PGA Tour record, I imagine. But a hell of a top five finish coming off the week, and how much energy he exerted leading up into this tournament.
On Thursday, he was 2 under par for his round, playing the 12th hole, hit it out of bounds, made a triple. He was 1 over par, and I was like, okay, here we go. He's going to mail it in. He's not going to be able to have a back-to-back great weeks, but then makes 3 birdies coming in on that Thursday to shoot 2 under par, and then absolutely balled out the last 3 rounds. A little bit of a concerning shot on 17 on Sunday, if I'm being honest, trying to chip a little 9-iron, but I do respect him for hitting it. It had just rained a ton. He was trying to take the spin off of it, and he ends up getting it up and down from 100-plus yards for bogey. So Wyndham Clark, I am fully on the Wyndham Clark bandwagon. This is a guy that gets really streaky, and when he plays well for a long time, and I think we're, you know, kind of right in the middle of a good run out of him.
Yeah, a little bit of a tough scene there where he was trying to be a little creative and hit a shot there on 17. Seemed like the first time all day, and he comes up 20 yards short and into the drink. But like you mentioned, Easy bogey, easy five at the end of the day. We're going to get into some of these 2026 storylines, probably dive deeper into Scotty a little bit more. Where's Rory McIlroy? Is he ever going to play again on the PGA Tour? And some other fun stuff here after the break. Welcome back to Scorecard, Johnson. Let's do a little bit of a choose your own adventure here. We're talking 2026 storylines up to this point. I'll give you a few options. We can talk about Scotty, Rory, the year of parity, Live Golf, perhaps. Where do you want to start?
We were just talking about Scotty, so let's stay on him for a second. And you know, we look at the 13 events that he's played since winning the Amex in his first start of the year. He hasn't finished outside the top 25. He has 8 top fives, 4 runner-ups. I think if you looked at any other player right now, you'd view that as a pretty darn successful season. I know when we talk about world number one, we want to see wins. He's been so dominant the last 2 years. I think when you think back to Scottie Scheffler's 2025, Patrick, and tell me if you disagree with this, I know he's been sort of playing down the fact that he was going for the career grand slam at Shinnecock, but when you look at how perfect, and you mentioned it, he's trying to be aggressive, he's trying to be so perfect, I think when you look back at 2025, the fact that he was going for that first time career grand slam at the U.S. Open this year, I think it's weighed him down more than he is letting on. And I think now that the U.S. Open's over, I think we're going to see Scottie Scheffler maybe get back to a little bit more of the guy that we've seen the last couple of years and sort of get into a bit more of a relaxed mode now that he knows what it feels like to be in that position to have a chance to win that tournament.
That's interesting. I don't think I've heard anyone talk about it because he's been so great at kind of shoving it off, you know, taking it to a side, not making it a bigger deal than what it is. But I think that's a really keen insight there, Johnson, where, you know, maybe we see Scottie Scheffler start looking more like the Scottie Scheffler of 24 and 25 here after the U.S. Open, because we know with Rory and others, it's always been a sigh of relief after the Grand Slam attempt. And do you think that's kind of just the missing thing, the mental side of it, just being able to relieve that stress a little bit? But is there anything else you think with Scheffler's game in particular that's maybe not clicking 100% at the moment?
Well, I mean, the iron play, it's still incredible, and he said how nicely he hit it this week, but the iron play is not as good as we've seen. I think if you look at proximity numbers over this year to last year, he's way down, so he's not having as many great chances. But, I mean, look at what has happened to Jordan Spieth since 2017 Open Championship when he now started going for the career Grand Slam. He's had a massive slowdown in his career. Rory McIlroy was really good still at winning PGA Tour events and DP World Tour events after he won the Open in 2014 and then was going for the career Grand Slam. So it remains to be seen, like, are we going to see Scotty get really stressed at this possibility of this attempt, or are we going to see him settle in and be the sort of committed, mentally strong? Because I think that's one of Scotty's greatest strength is his mental game. And I feel like the mental game and everything's just been a little bit off, and I am going to chalk it up to that attempt at the U.S. Open.
I think I'm with you. It just seems like he would get more flustered than usual over rather mundane stuff. And I think the easy one to pick out of the crop is what happened at the Memorial with Teddy Scott getting upset about the wind when he hit the ball in the water and making a double bogey there when he thought he had a perfect shot with the 7-iron there. It kind of does seem a little like 2023 for Scheffler, where he had 3 wins on the year, including the Players' Championship, and just a boatload of top five podium finishes, runner-up. Obviously, the culprit there was the putter was nowhere near what it is currently. He couldn't buy a putt to save his life, put the spider in the bag and the claw grip the following year, and the rest is history. But I think it's really big for Scheffler to win another tournament by the end of the year, because I think winning is almost like a muscle where you got to work it out enough. And right now, I'm not saying he has to relearn how to win, but it does feel very different on the back nine on Sunday, where it seemed so easy a couple years ago, and it seems somewhat difficult right now.
It does seem difficult, but I mean, that's also what goes with raising the bar, the amount he has over the last couple of years. I mean, he's raised the bar for the PGA Tour. Like, if you're playing in a tournament with Scottie Scheffler, you know you have to bring it, which is what Victor Hovland did coming off that delay. Like, I think it probably would have been better for Scotty had there not been the rain delay and they just continued to play, because Victor was not firing on all cylinders and Scotty was a little bit more so. I mean, the two shots he hit on 13 to give himself that look at eagle, like he was ready to go, hit that bullet off of 14 down the fairway and was staring a wedge into that short par 4 14th. So, I think players realize now if they're going to contend with him, they've got to bring their best, because Scotty doesn't make a whole lot of mistakes. I mean, he did make mistakes coming down the stretch, but he rectified them with good par putting. So I think the bar's just been raised.
And I think that's just another good point of how you need breaks to go your way to win, and how fine the margins are, where if that rain cloud never comes with that bit of electricity, Scottie Scheffler is probably your Travelers Championship winner, knowing Hovland didn't have his A game right there and how that break kind of affected the entire final round. Back to the proximity point, producer Josh had this in our outline. He's 91st in terms of proximity this season and outside the top 100 with wedge numbers in particular, 75 to 100 yards and 100 to 125 yards. I think, you know, maybe once a round or so, he turns a scoring opportunity into a scrambling opportunity instead, and I think that's kind of the big difference leading into it. But I liked what I saw from him from the Travelers Championship, and I would be shocked if he doesn't at least get one more come the end of the year, just knowing the schedule. And Johnson, he's got the 3M Open. He's got the 3M Open on the calendar this year. That's like a free throw for this guy.
It's going to be a good golf course for him too. There's tons of water off the tee out there, as good as he's driving the ball now. And that's another thing. At the beginning of the year, he was going through testing his company's new driver. He's still got the one that's 3 years old. So I think maybe that took a little time away from him working on his wedge game, which is also, like you said, a muscle. Winning's a muscle. Wedge plays a muscle. So what happened with Rory last year when he breaks out and wins the Masters for the first time, he had put so much time into his wedge play and being able to control the spin. And if you're not working on it constantly, if you're worrying about other things, then it can get left out. And that's why we see a little dip.
You know who's not going to be adding the 3M Open to his schedule, Johnson?
Rory.
You got to guess. You got to guess.
Yeah,
Rory McIlroy.
Gonna skip.
I don't think he's going to be in Blaine, Minnesota this week. I don't know how much he's going to be playing on the PGA Tour the rest of the way. It's obviously been something that's been brought up as of late, not hitting the minimum 15 start requirement and them possibly being a clause for circumstances that roll up and the big wigs at the PGA Tour can pass him by. But Rory has played in 8 PGA Tour events this year, not including the API, which he withdrew from, of course, with that back injury back in March. And it just seems like the rest of the way it'll be the Scottish, the Open. He'll probably skip Memphis again, and then it'll be BMW Tour Championship, and then his fall in Europe, which, of course, he plays a ton of with the Irish Open, BMW PGA Championship. But what do you make of this kind of new schedule from Rory in this stage of his career?
I mean, Rory's a global player, and he's going to end up playing probably close to 22, 23 events all over the world. I mean, we're talking India, Australia, all over Europe, the Middle East, U.S. I have no problem with it. I mean, it takes a lot out of you traveling like that. Now, granted, Rory's probably flying private jets, and he's not flying in economy over to Dubai, but I still think he plays a ton around the world, and I think he views himself more as a global ambassador to the game of golf, and he's made it pretty clear over the last two seasons he's going to choose to play national opens. He's going to go support the game across the world. I have no problem with him playing less than 15 events. I don't know if that's something starting in 2028 the PGA Tour is going to take another look at, given the fact that Rolap has said he wants a 23-24 tournament Champions Series schedule. Like, if you only have Rory McIlroy playing 13, 14 of those events, four of which plus the players, so you got five of those aren't PGA Tour events. Like, it could be a problem going forward for the structure of the PGA Tour. I mean, we need those guys to really buy into this new model if it's going to work.
And I will say one of those changes for the PGA Tour, which I'm most excited for, is Rolap and the PGA Tour pushing these guys towards that fall stretch on the DP World Tour. Because one, it never made sense to me that these guys were allowed to play in the FedEx Cup fall and just pick off wins when they have, you know, they're not playing for their jobs. They're not playing for points. They're just really playing to play, or whether it's a sponsorship obligation like Ben Griffin at the WWT this past fall. But I love that stretch of golf on the DP World Tour with the Irish and at Wentworth as well. And to get more guys possibly into those tournaments would be phenomenal. I don't know if we'll see Scotty Scheffler and like a Patrick Cantlay over there, but if you can get more top 30 guys in the world, it obviously elevates the game globally. I agree with you. I think Rory's probably more than earned it at this point of his career. He's playing a ton of golf. Final question for you with Rory. When do you think the last time he did fly commercial was?
I would think he probably flew commercial when he was wearing the Oakley shirts with the Jumeirah logo, but I think once he signed with Nike, that was probably the hit of that was probably
the end of that
commercial flights. Yes.
Got the tail wing RM something something something. I don't know the number specifically. Okay, we got a little bit of time left. Let's touch on the year of parity. Wags, three major championships, three different winners. The signature events are over. We got eight different winners. We got Morikawa, Bridgman, Batia, Cam Young, Fitz, Chris Wrighton, JT Poston, and Victor Hovland. Second straight year, Wags, that we've had eight different winners in the signature events. What do you make of this?
I like it, and I think we're going to see more of it going forward as we expand these fields for that championship series to 120. But you look back to last year, McIlroy won a signature event, the Players and the Masters. Scottie Scheffler won a signature event, the Open Championship and the PGA. So you had six of these big, what we'll call it 12 events. Six of them were won by number one and two in the world. You can't say that this year. Cam Young's the only one that's won multiple of those events, and that's the Players and the Cadillac. So I like it personally. I also like seeing dominant players be dominant, but I think we're going, as we move forward to this 2028 schedule, we're going to see that parity increase because of the depth of the PGA Tour, the depth of professional golf, and the fact that field sizes are going up.
I agree with you. And we're only a couple bounces or revolutions away of Scheffler having a couple of these with those playoff losses, of course, too. And so it kind of just shows you once again how thin these margins are. We'll get into, you know, maybe some other margins when it comes to LIV Golf here after the break and some other storylines that have transpired in 2026 and what we're looking forward to the rest of the way. We have one major championship left, the Open Championship, of course, the FedEx Cup playoffs as well. And then we'll get into the John Deere Classic at TPC Deer Run. We'll get into all of that after the break. And we're back here on Scorecard Johnson. Only a handful of weeks left. I believe 6 weeks left until the playoffs are here for the FedEx Cup, which is wild. Seems like just the other day we were at the Sony Open. People were complaining that we weren't going to Kapalua for the century. Oh, to rewind the clocks. But we've got a lot going on still. Open Championship, FedEx Cup. I want to touch on LIV Golf a little bit because their schedule with the removal of Louisiana and New Orleans is completely barren up until the Open Championship. So do we think LIV Golf exists in any form in 27? I know that's a loaded question I'm tossing at you right now.
I don't, Patrick. I mean, they're looking for $300 million to go forward for next year. The way they've currently been running that tour with the purses, $300 million is just scratching the surface. I don't know what company, and they're trying to break it up into $50 million investments with different companies. I don't know what company could possibly see a return on their investment with that. It would just be somebody else throwing money away just to keep it going. And personally, no, I don't. And also, the only way that model works is by reducing purses. And when these players signed with LIV, they signed to play $20, $25 million purses. And I think there'd be absolute revolt. I don't know how many players have re-signed, but this year I know there's a lot of contracts up, and I'm sure players are looking for a way out. I spoke to a LIV player that lives in my hometown of Charlotte the other day, and he is trying to make his way back to the PGA Tour. I think that tour is absolutely going to crumble at the in August. It'll be done.
Never good when your CEO is on CNBC and just giving the most fluffed up answers to the host. And it seems like every time a golf leader is on CNBC, the market tanks that day. I don't know why. It happens every single time. I don't like it. Stop going on CNBC you C-suite people. And I think with the PGA Tour in 2028, it's very simple how you can see a path back. It's like, okay, you have to play on the Challenger Series until you make your way up to the Championship Series. So that's kind of an added layer to this. Speaking of maybe some live guys with Rahm and Bryson going for his own sort of career Grand Slam at the Open Championship with four missed cuts potentially in the four majors. You talked about Royal Birkdale a little bit with Colin Morikawa. Anything before we get to Birkdale that you're keeping an eye on with players or whether course-wise, anything in particular before the third week of July?
Well, I mean, you mentioned Bryson DeChambeau. I think he is going to be terrible at Birkdale. I mean, with the dunes running down the sides of pretty much both fairways, if we get any sort of heavy winds, the Open Championship is by far his worst event. That he played pretty decent the last three rounds at Portrush last year, but that's because we had a little bit of rain and there was no wind. The course was softer. He could throw the ball up in the air. He's proven to me that he cannot flight it down. So yeah, I'm going to look out for weather trends. Would love to see a firm and fast, sort of a hot, barren Birkdale, as opposed to what we saw when Brian Harman won at Hoylake when it was wet and rained all week long. I like seeing the firm, fast conditions because I do feel like that sort of eliminates part of the field.
I did watch Bryson's newest YouTube video, Johnson. He talked for 30 minutes about why he has missed the cut in the three major championships. And we'll see if him being able to get that off his chest leads to any different results at the Open. But I'm with you. I don't think he's as well-rounded as required for an Open championship. Let's talk into kind of the last few months and right in the hot hand. Guys who are finding form once again, and someone I've been really impressed with as of late is Sam Burns. His game is continuing to translate at these more difficult golf courses, still without a win in quite a while. But I think he's someone who make a legitimate push towards the FedEx Cup and maybe even contend at the Open.
He's swinging the club great, drives it really well. His iron play's good. Some of the wedges he hit in soft conditions at Travelers last week were just spectacular. Has great spin control, and the best part of his game is putter. I love Sam Burns. I like that. I'm looking at Xander Schauffele, your guy. Xander, U.S. Open specialist. Like, when is he going to come back and be that dominant player that we saw 2 years ago? I think he is on the upward trend right now.
I'm glad you brought up Xander. I'm going to bring him up in the next segment. Wags and I are going to talk about our Player of the Year's Open Champion picks, FedEx Cup Champion picks, currently and who they may be down the line. It's a little saute on the action there for you, Wags. But we'll get in all that and more after a quick word. Okay, Wags, I'm going to mix it up a little bit on you. We can do the Player of the Year predictions and all that, but we're going to go twofold here. Your current pick and the eventual pick, if that makes sense. So as of now, June 30th, Tuesday, 1:41 p.m. Eastern time, who's your Player of the Year and who do you think eventually wins it?
As of right now, I would go with Matt Fitzpatrick, three-time winner on the PGA Tour. Got his brother a card. I'm kidding. I know Alex earned that just as much as he did. But three-time winner on tour. He's won a signature event. Rory only has the Masters, hasn't really done much other than that. I know that's a big feather in the cap. Wyndham Clark's making a push, but I think the eventual Player of the Year is going to be Scottie Scheffler. I see him winning at least two more times, probably the FedEx Cup as well. He's already number one in the FedEx Cup race. He's just expanding that lead with every second-place finish. So Fitz and Scottie.
I am in lockstep with you. I think Fitz has been the best player up to this point. It was good to see him at least in weekend contention at the U.S. Open on Saturday. Obviously, didn't play great over the weekend, but to be in that final pairing, it felt like that was almost the missing link in his season, having played well at the Players Championship. He hadn't gotten into that weekend contention yet at the U.S. Open. And then I'm with you, Scottie Scheffler, I think, is going to be the Player of the Year. I think there's just a lot of noise about the lack of winning right now, and it's going to fall his way eventually, and he's going to win three times by the end of the year. So with you in that regard, here's a little bit of a different one. Who have you been most disappointed by? And I come at this angle with you had really high hopes for them coming into the year, and they've just fallen short of them thus far.
I hate to say it, but it's Jordan Spieth. I think coming off of a year where he played okay with that wrist injury, coming off the wrist surgery. I was expecting a lot. I thought we'd see Jordan get in contention a few times. I thought we'd see him win by now. I'm definitely disappointed, and I hate to say it because I love him so much, but I got to see some more out of you, Jordan. I don't want to see you on the Challenger Tour in 2028.
Stop. Don't even throw that out there, Wags. Don't even think about it. What do you think of him testing out the lab putters and mallets ahead of the Travelers?
I heard on a clip from the No Laying Up podcast, and I'm not necessarily a huge, I love a lot of those guys, but the one person that said it, I think has some weird takes sometimes, but he said going from a blade putter to a lab putter is like going from drinking a few cocktails with your friends to starting to shoot up heroin. There's a lot of steps in between you need to take to get there. And I thought it was perfectly said. I would love to see him. Why go straight to the lab? So many
spider.
People are having success with spider with a two ball. Like, let's limp into this mallet thing. Let's not go straight from drinking a little bit too much to the hard drugs.
Yeah. Get one of those phantoms in your hand too. Come on. The lab just, it reeked of desperation. I don't know why he went that way. And I talked to him the week before the US Open, and he told me, he's like, yeah, I got tested. The blade is perfect for me. I'm never going to go to a mallet. And then 2 weeks later, he's testing the mallets, which I think kind of just speaks to Jordan Spieth as a whole in this state of his game. It's been over 4 years since he's won. I was looking up this afternoon, which is sad to say. Okay, we'll get into let's get into FedEx Cup champ. Obviously, a little bit different after the change in 2025. You just got to win the Tour Championship, pretty much. But you got to get there. Who's gonna be your FedEx Cup champ by year's end?
Well, I mean, Xander Schauffele is a U.S. Open specialist. He's also an Eastlake specialist. Guy's had incredible success around that golf course, more so since Andrew Green before Andrew Green redid it. But I think Xander Schauffele is going to take down the Tour Championship this year. He's just too good around that place.
Speaking of Xander Schauffele, he's been my most disappointing. Even though he's had some good results, it just seems like a lot of floor performances thus far from him, and it hasn't really gotten himself into the mix. And seems like outside of major championships and the Players' Championship, there's just a lack of sharpness with him, which I thought he challenged Scotty Scheffler for maybe being the best in the world this year. Wrong on that account. My pick is Patrick Cantlay, just because I think it'd be very poetic. Had a chance to win it last year, was in that final pairing with Tommy Fleetwood. Currently 40th in the FedEx Cup, or reaching bubble talk portion of the PGA Tour calendar. He has to get into the Tour Championship first and foremost, but I think it would just be poetic if you won a boatload of money by winning the Tour Championship and being the FedEx Cup champion without winning a tournament all year. So he's going to be my pick.
Well, he plays the BMW Championship well, you know that. So all he needs to do is get to the BMW, and I'm sure he'll make it to Eastlake.
Exactly. Maybe he's got to add the 3M Open, like Scotty Scheffler, perhaps. Make that tournament in Minnesota all the rave. But we got a tournament this weekend, the John Deere Classic. Wags, I was diving into your data golf profile, and the mid-2010s, the place that Johnson Wagner built. We'll get into all of that and more after a quick break. Okay, Wags, John Deere Classic week. You had a run there, 14, 15, 16. I want to zone in on 2015 in particular. I'm looking at this leaderboard. It's amazing, honestly. JT, T5 as well. Spieth obviously grabs a second win. What are the memories from the 2015 John Deere Classic?
Oh, I played with Zach Johnson in the final round. I think we're in like the third to last group, and coming down the finishing stretch at Deer Run, if you're in contention, is incredible. The whole back nine, really, but the last five holes, crowds are just on you. And when you play with Zach Johnson, who's from Cedar Rapids just down the road, it's even better. And on the 18th hole, I had about a 15 footer for par. He was about 12 feet on the same line. I was really nervous, and I don't know if I hooked a putt, but it went in dead center for par. And then Zach, who was like getting in to read the putt off of my strike, ends up, this is to force a playoff with Spieth. At the time, we thought it was to force a playoff, and it would have. And he lips it out catastrophically. Like, it went the other way because I had hit such a bad putt. And then my caddy, Matt Hauser, we're walking off the green and kind of tapped Zach on the shoulder and said, "Hey, man, it's really fun to be out here with you. You'll make the putt next week at the Open Championship," which he ended up winning at St. Andrews, his Open Championship, the very next week. Just an absolutely phenomenal tournament. I played with Steve Stricker 1 year on Saturday, late in the round, and it was just – it's one of my favorite events of the year, and I hate when people talk about this new Challenger Series, Championship Series, and the only way John Deere would be in it is if they agreed to move to Chicago. Tell you what, if you had Rory and Scotty and all the best players in the world come to the John Deere Classic, you would see some of the biggest crowds of the year. This community supports it, and it's a wonderful TPC golf course with a great finish. One of the best events all year long, and it has been for a long time. Just needs more players to support it. And thank goodness this year, you've got some pretty good guys in the field. You got Bridgman, Goddard, Spieth, Fowler. You've got some big names that have supported that tournament for years back in action at the John Deere Classic.
So Zach Johnson doesn't win the Open at the home of golf without Johnson Wagner, perhaps. I think that's the headliner right there. What is it about this golf course that you loved so much?
The first couple of years, I didn't particularly enjoy it, but you've got to do everything really well around there. You've got to drive the ball nice. The fairways are big, but it's got such a good mixture of quirky, short little layup par fours and then some really brutal long par fours like number 9 and number 15. It's got a great drivable par four in the finishing stretch on 14, a good mixture of par threes. Basically, you've got to hit every club in your bag around TPC Deer Run, and it's a brutal walk, and it's generally pretty hot there. So that's why I played so well, because of my physical fitness, Patrick.
Yeah, clearly. It's funny you say that. I was talking to I think it was Mav McNeely, and he said it's sneaky one of the more difficult walks on the PGA Tour, especially with how hot it gets in July, and just brutal. Put it next to Caves Valley from in Baltimore, which is a brutal walk as well, especially in August. You mentioned the players who are supporting it. Jordan Spieth back in the field, second time in the last few years after taking a little bit of a break. Ricky Fowler as well. Ben Griffin, the favorite. Goddard, some guys inside the top 20 in the world, but I'm keying in on the kid. You got to. It's got to be 21-year-old Jackson Koivun. A lot of expectations on this guy, the only player ever to sweep all the awards in college with the Mickelson, Nicklaus, Hogan, and Haskins in 24, alongside Rahm and Oberg, twice a winner of the Hogan, too. So what are the expectations for the 21-year-old? Because it seems like everyone, they're sky high.
My expectations are sky high. I've got him on my can win list because, I mean, just coming off a T23 in his last amateur start at the U.S. Open. And you look at a guy like Ben James just a few weeks ago at the Canadian Open, first event as a professional. He finds himself in the final pairing on Saturday. Well, Jackson Koivun's a better player than Ben James. And Koivun is a much better putter, doesn't have that weird reverse left-hand low saw. I see Jackson Koivun have a legitimate chance to win this week.
So Koivun made 10 starts as an amateur on the PGA Tour. He has 5 straight top 25 finishes as an amateur as well. T11 in the John Deere Classic last year. You mentioned the can win that Koivun's on the list. Who else is on the list for you?
I've got Jacob Bridgman. I think he's about to have a resurgence, had that great hot start to the year. And I've also got Jordan Spieth. I think 2-time champion coming back to comfy environment. I think he's going to have so much support from the crowd. He'll definitely have the biggest crowds of the week. So I think Jordan Spieth's going to be right on that list too, but I'm going with Jacob Bridgman. He's going to win.
Oh, okay. Grabbing the second win of the season, kind of has been a little bit of a lull ever since the West Coast. I like it. I got Keegan Bradley on my list. I think he's out of the Ryder Cup hangover, starting to hit the golf ball better. And he's number 69 in the FedEx Cup, not someone who's played well in Scotland. So he needs a big week, I think, knowing that the rest of the calendar doesn't really suit him. I got Ryo Hisatsune. And then I got Max Homa, someone who missed out on qualifying for the U.S. Open. But I think with Max, if the mentals are in a good spot, he's typically in a good spot. And I think the ball striking is in a decent spot for him. We're not going to get into the can't win because we don't have the time. And we're trying to be more positive on this show, Wags. I think that's a good thing from us Virginia Tech guys, being more positive. But that'll do it for Scorecard this week. You got the John Deere Classic on CBS and Paramount Plus this weekend at 3 p.m. Be sure to subscribe on the Golf on CBS YouTube, Apple Podcast, and Spotify. We'll see you next week.
Paramount Podcasts.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.